Yep, go ahead.
And King Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, reigned instead of Coniah, the son of Jehoiakim, whom Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, made king in the land of Judah. But neither he nor his servants nor the people of the land did hearken unto the words of the Lord, which he spake by the prophet Jeremiah. And Zedekiah the king sent Jehoiakim, the son of that's why nobody wanted to volunteer for this. Shelemiah and Zephaniah, the son of Mahazlah, the priest, to the prophet Jeremiah, saying, pray now unto the Lord God for us. And Jeremiah came and went out among the people, for they had not put him into prison. Then Pharaoh's army was come forth out of Egypt. And when Chaldeans, I know that's not right.
Chaldeans.
Yeah, I'm reading out of an old Bible, and it's got weird vowel points, it's not spelled like the King James Version. I grabbed the wrong Bible. New Anglican Index. Maybe I ought to grab a different one. The Chaldeans that besieged Jerusalem heard tidings of them. They departed from Jerusalem. Then came the word of the Lord unto the prophet Jeremiah, saying, thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, thou shalt ye say unto the king of Judah that sent you unto me to inquire of me, behold, Pharaoh's army, which is come forth to help you, shall return to Egypt into their own land, and the Chaldeans shall come again and fight against this city and take it and burn it with fire. Thus saith the Lord, deceive not yourselves, saying, the Chaldeans shall surely depart from us, for they shall not depart. For though ye had smitten the whole army of the Chaldeans that fought against you, and there remained but wounded men among them, yet should they rise up every man in his tent and burn this city with fire. And it came to pass, when the army of the Chaldeans was broken up from Jerusalem for the fear of Pharaoh's army, then Jeremiah went forth out of Jerusalem to go into the land of Benjamin, to separate himself thence, to receive his portion there in the midst of the people. And when he was in the gate of Benjamin, a captain of the ward was there, whose name was Ariah, the son of Shelemiah, the son of Hananiah. And he took Jeremiah the prophet, saying, thou fallest away to the Chaldeans. You want to add anything there?
No, not yet. I'm looking for this the identity of this pharaoh must be Psamtik II, I believe. Egypt was overrun with Nubians, with niggers, and they had nigger pharaohs in the time of Isaiah, but that's about 100 years before this time. That period had come to a close. It seems, no, it's not even Necho II, it's Apries. And Egypt had a revival under Pharaoh Necho II, but he died in 595 BC. Now we're closer to 585 BC. And the Pharaoh would be Apries, evidently. And that's the name that Herodotus, indeed, or Siculus used for him. Apries was an active builder who constructed additions, blah, 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 to temples, blah, blah, blah. Apries dispatched a force to Jerusalem to protect it from Babylonian forces sent by Nebuchadnezzar II. So there you have it. Apries is the name of the pharaoh.
And he was probably Adamic.
Yeah, you know what? He really does look it in this one, but his nose is busted out of this one sculpture of him from the Louvre. And I'm only looking at the Wikipedia and the Britannica pages.
They might have done that on purpose to hide his nose or something.
Yeah, I really did think they did that to a lot of statues purposely to hide their noses, to conceal the fact that they had white Aryan type noses and not like big hook noses like the Kayaks or wide noses like the Niggers. Wide flat noses. So it seems, I mean, I've never done a full study on a chronology of this period, but it seems that Apries was the pharaoh. And that makes sense because this is a little too late for the pharaoh that Herodotus called Necho. The pharaoh Necho was two pharaohs before Apries. He did march through Judah in the days of Josiah, and that's when Josiah met his end. And that was like 612 BC, no, 608 BC, I think. So that's when Josiah died, and then Jehoiakim was king, and then Jeconiah, and now it's Zedekiah is king of Jerusalem. And Apries is one of the successors of Necho. But Egypt had a revival under Necho that... It really tried to recover from being overrun with niggers. It didn't last very long. It really didn't. But I guess they were still at the height of that revival here with Apries in order to be able to send such an army to Jerusalem that the Book of Nezar was actually in fear of it.
If the Egyptians wanted a real revival, they should have repented before Yahweh God, because every pagan nation goes the same way.
Well, right, of course, but I think even then it was too late for Egypt. I mean, there was so much nigger blood sown into Egypt during that period of time that Herodotus, maybe about 450 or 440 BC, visited Egypt. And thought that the Egyptians were black and had woolly hair. So Egypt was already fucked by then.
Maybe that's when they built the pyramids, Bill, and the space pyramids.
Yeah, right. It's evident to me that enough black blood was sown into Egypt during the time of the Nubian pharaohs, that probably set in motion a force which the tide couldn't be turned. That more and more women were having babies with these niggers.
Yeah.
And it's about the shape of the United States today.
Only these days it happens a lot quicker because of technology and travel.
Yeah.
And other things, right?
Yeah, right, absolutely.
Like propaganda in your face on video all day long and music and so forth. Yep.
But who knows how much more Arab blood how much more Nubian black blood the Arabs introduce into Egypt too.
Microphone.
Well, we can continue.
Okay. Then said Jeremiah, it is false. I fall not away to the Chaldeans, but he hearkened not unto him. So Uriah took Jeremiah and brought him to the princes. Wherefore the princes were wroth with Jeremiah and smote him and put him to prison in the house of Jonathan the scribe, for they made that the prison. When Jeremiah was entered into the dungeon and into the cabins, and Jeremiah had remained there many days, then Zedekiah the king sent and took him out, and the king asked him secretly in his house, and said, "Is there any word for the Lord?" And Jeremiah said, "There is, for said he, thou shalt not deliver into the hand of the king of Babylon." Moreover, Jeremiah said unto Zedekiah, "What have I offended against thee, or against thy servants, or against this people, that ye have put me in prison? Where are now your prophets which prophesied unto you, saying, the king of Babylon shall not come against you, nor against this land? Therefore, hear now, I pray thee, O my lord the king, let my supplications, I pray thee, be acceptable before thee, that thou shalt cause me not to return to the house of Jonathan the scribe, lest I die there." Then Zedekiah the king commanded that they should commit Jeremiah into the court of the prison, and that they should give him daily a piece of bread out of the baker's street until all the bread in the city were spent, lest Jeremiah remained in the court of the prison.
What do you think? That's like the custom of the supply there, Bill, because Jeremiah's making supplications to a king. So if the king refused his supplications, then Zedekiah would have been seen as a horrible king.
Microphone activated.
Well, Zedekiah made Jeremiah did make a supplication there to Jeremiah, to Zedekiah, there's no doubt. But if you look a little before that, the people thought that Jeremiah was working for the Chaldeans. Now, in verse 13, right? "And when he was in the gate of Benjamin, a captain of the ward was there, whose name was Iriah, the son of Shelemiah, the son of Hananiah, and he took Jeremiah the prophet, saying, thou fallest away to the Chaldeans." So he was actually accusing Jeremiah of being a spy or an agent for the Babylonians. So Jeremiah said, "No, I fall not away to the Chaldeans," but they didn't hear him, but he hearkened not to him. He didn't believe him. So Uriah took Jeremiah and brought him to the princes, and they put him in prison because they thought he was a spy or an agent for the Babylonians. So that's pretty common. I mean, the city is under siege, right? There's a Babylonian army outside the city that wants to bust the walls down and burn the city and destroy all the Judeans. So, I mean, you can't really blame these guys for locking Jeremiah up, because they're not theologians, that they probably are raised without God, because Jerusalem had gone pagan by this time. So what would they know? They're just like the typical goons that we got for cops today. They're no different.
Yeah, but it looks like Zedekiah knew that he's innocent.
And that's what I was about to explain now. It Zedekiah evidently realized that Jeremiah was sincere. So he gave him a modicum of mercy. And that court of the prison is a little ambiguous to me, but it seems to be like an area outside of the prison that he was to be kept in, outside of the house of Jonathan the scribe, but in the proximity thereof. That's how I'm reading it, that court of the prison.
Ready for 38?
Yes, sir.
Microphone muted.
Then Sephatiah, the son of Matan and Gedaliah, the son of Pachur, and Jachal, and the son of Shelmaniah, and Pachur, the son of Melchiah, heard the words of Jeremiah had spoken unto the people, saying, Thus saith the Lord, he that remaineth in the city shall die by the sword, by famine, and by the pestilence. But he that goeth forth to the Chaldeans shall live, for he shall have his life for a prey, and shall live. Thus saith the Lord, this city shall surely be given into the hands of the king of the Babylon's army, which shall take thee. Therefore the princes said unto you, the king, we beseech thee, let this man be put to death, for thus he weakeneth the hands of the men of war that remain in the city, and the hands of all the people, in speaking such words unto them. For this man speaketh not the welfare of this people, but the hurt. Then Zedekiah the king said, Behold, he is in your hands, for the king is not he that can do anything against you.
So Zedekiah was a cuck. I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah, that's what they're making him out to be, right? Then took they Jeremiah and cast him into the dungeon of Melchiah, the son of Hamelech, that was in the court of the prison. And they let down Jeremiah with cords. And in the dungeon there was no water but mire. So Jeremiah sunk in the mire. Now when Abedmelech,
the Ethiopian,
one of the eunuchs which was in the king's house, heard that they had put Jeremiah in the dungeon, the king then sitting in the gate of Benjamin. Abedmelech went forth out of the king's house and spake to the king, saying, My lord the king, these men have done evil in all that they have done to Jeremiah the prophet, whom they have cast into the dungeon, and he is like to die for hunger in the place where he is, for there is no bread in the city. Then the king commanded Abedmelech the Ethiopian, saying, Take from hence 30 men with thee, and take up Jeremiah the prophet out of the dungeon before he die. So Abedmelech took the men with him and went into the house of the king under the treasury, and took thence old cast cloths and old rotten rags, and let down by cords into the dungeon to Jeremiah. And Abedmelech the Ethiopian said unto Jeremiah, Put now these old cast cloths and rags under thine armholes, under thy cords. And Jeremiah did so. So they drew up Jeremiah with the cords and took him out of the dungeon. And Jeremiah remained in the court in the prison. Then Zedekiah the king sent and took Jeremiah the prophet and to him. Into the third entry that is in the house of the Lord. And the king said unto Jeremiah, I will ask thee a thing, hide nothing from me. And Jeremiah said to Zedekiah, If I declare it unto thee, wilt thou not surely put me to death? And if I give thee counsel, wilt thou not hearken unto me? So Zedekiah the king swore secretly, and Jeremiah saying, The Lord liveth, that made us this soul. I will not put thee into death, neither will I give thee into the hand of these men that seek thy life. Then said Jeremiah unto Zedekiah, Thus saith the Lord, the God of hosts, the God of Israel, If thou wilt assuredly go forth unto the king of Babylon's princes, then thy soul shall live, and the city shall not be burned with fire, but thou shalt live in thine houses. But if thou wilt not go forth to the king of Babylon's princes, Then shall the city be given into the hands of the Chaldeans, and they shall burn it with fire, and thou shalt not escape out of their hand. And Zedekiah the king said unto him, Jeremiah, I am afraid of the, here we go, Jews that are fallen to the Chaldeans, lest they deliver me into their hands, and they mock me. But Jeremiah said, they shall not deliver thee. Obey, I beseech thee, the voice of the Lord, which I speak unto thee. So it shall be well unto thee, and thy soul shall live. But if thou refuse to go forth, this is the word that the Lord hath sworn. And behold, all the women that are left in the kings of Judah's house shall be brought forth to the king of Babylon's princes. And these women shall say, thy friends have set thee on and have prevailed against thee. Thy feet are sunk in the mire, and they are turned away back, so that they shall bring out of thy wives and thy children to the Chaldeans, and thou shalt not escape out of their hand, but shall be taken by the hand of the king of Babylon, and thou shalt cause this city to be burned with fire. Anything to add in all that?
Well, not really. It was just inevitable. I did have something to say earlier, and I'm not sure if I remember it now, but it's just inevitable that Yahweh, it was time to give Jerusalem up to the enemy and destroy it completely. It was corrupt beyond redemption. So it was inevitable, and there was no way Zedekiah was going to resist it. And Jeremiah is just being a really good guy trying to tell him that, trying to help him. And Zedekiah is kind of realizing that, right? That's why he had mercy on Jeremiah. He's kind of realizing that, but he still doesn't want to believe it. It's hard for a man that's a king or in any position of power or authority to just give that up and throw it all away. So that's what he would have to do. And in the end, he can't do it.
In the 19th verse there in Zedekiah, the king said unto Jeremiah, I'm afraid of the Jews that are fallen to the Chaldeans. The Jews there, of course, we know that that's not Jews, but is that Judeans?
Yeah, that should be Judahites. I would translate that as Judahites, the people of Judah, right?
Okay.
I mean, you could translate it as Judeans. It's kind of ahead of its time, because that form comes from the Greek, Judahios, right? But yeah, it's about the same thing, Judahite, Judean. Originally, not in the time of Christ, that half the Judeans or more were Edomites, right? That this is Abedmelech the Ethiopian. That word Ethiopian, of course, is Cushite. And there were Cushites in Mesopotamia as well as on the Horn of Africa. So Abedmelech could have been from anywhere. And of course, the Hebrews were forbidden from cutting off a man's testicles. So he probably was only a eunuch in a sense of being a person or a man that performed some function in the court of the king. But he wasn't necessarily a literal eunuch, meaning that his nuts were cut off, right? Which is what they did to them in ancient times.
At verse 17, Jeremiah uses the title God of Armies, and Zedekiah didn't even pick up on that. He's telling him, you know, this is the God of Armies. You better believe him and you better obey him and not worry about the other men, you know, in verse 19, the warriors who have fought. Yeah. So he uses that title, and Zedekiah should have picked up on that, I reckon.
I'm sorry?
Well, Jeremiah uses the title God of Armies, and Zedekiah should have realized what he was saying.
Yes.
User disconnected from your channel.
Right, but that Lord of Hosts, that was pretty common throughout first and from the time of 1st and 2nd Samuels. It doesn't appear before 1st Samuel. It doesn't appear in Moses, Judges, or Joshua.
Wow, it doesn't appear in Joshua. That's kind of disappointing for me.
The first time the phrase Lord of Hosts appears, or the phrase of hosts appears, is in 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse 3. Perhaps that's how long it took the children of Israel to realize it.
Yeah, you'd think they'd realize it at the time of Joshua. Maybe that's how he got the title, though. Maybe he's saying, look, you know, look what I did at the time of Joshua. This is my title. I don't know.
It's all throughout 1 Samuel. It's in 2 Samuel a half dozen times. It's in 1 Kings and 2 Kings a total of about 5 times. It's in 1 Chronicles 3 times, but not in 2 Chronicles.
User entered your
It's
channel.
In about 15 of the Psalms. It's all throughout Isaiah, like, wow. Probably over 100 times, and Jeremiah probably another 100. Maybe I'm exaggerating a little, but probably not by much. It's in Hosea once, it's in Amos over a dozen times. Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, a lot in Haggai, a lot in Zechariah, and a lot in Malachi. But it doesn't appear in the New Testament because Jesus loves everybody. So we're no longer supposed to have armies. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. Yeah, the phrase doesn't appear in the New Testament.
Still, Jesus is pretty...
I never thought about that. Doesn't.
Yeah, but he's saying other things like, you know, who are they that would not have me rule over them? Come hither and slay them before me.
Yep. So he's still 19:27. Yes, sir.
All right, you ready to continue?
The entire Lord of Hosts paradigm is expressed in the Revelation, especially in chapter 19. But it's also elsewhere, and it's not expressed in the same terms, but it is expressed.
He's definitely treading down the wicked. Just like in the prophets, in Revelation, he's treading them down.
Right. Horse, leading his armies, right?
I never really thought of it like that. I've read it. I don't know how many times, but until Joe mentioned it, you know, Lord of Hosts or Lord of Armies, I never really put that together. Like the whole host Israel army.
Yeah. God of armies. I always read it like that because I like God of armies. And then I think of Jesus like treading down the wicked. And you know what it says, he who righteously does war or something in Revelation, he who is true, and I can't remember the verse right now, but he who makes war in righteousness or something.
Well, I'm looking at the BDB and it's, you know, army, entire creation, sun, moon, and stars, battle, combat, conflict, hardship. There's many different, but it's essentially all the same thing, right?
I think you're reading that wrong, Joe. I think it's he who saves the most abos wins. Isn't that what it is?
Oh, yeah, that's the revised edition. The new Jewish, you know.
Go ahead, put your passage in there. It's Revelation 19:11.
Yeah, I just found it too. And he, in righteousness, he doth judge and make war. So he's making war. He's doing it. I'm all for it. And he was
clothed. Silence of the lambs.
Yeah.
Little lamb. I actually did struggle with whether or not I should make that plural, but according to promises, it should be plural.
You want to continue? With 38?
Silence of the Lambs only got 6,000 downloads, but Camp of the Saints got 8,400. I don't get it, man.
I've enjoyed and all of
them. The City of God got 8,700. How do y'all like Bible blunders?
I liked it. That was good. How many downloads did it get?
Well, the first one I put up there got about 600 downloads, but it was screwed up and I couldn't play it, so I replaced it. And now it's got 3,200. If I didn't have to replace it, it probably would have been further ahead, but that's all right. This week
some
I'm
people
critiquing a compare
where they've been messing up or reading something wrong or thinking wrong, so they might not listen to it.
Yeah, right. That's crazy, but that's all right. This kinda week like I'm critiquing a compare and I already wrote it. I'm done. I got about 8,000 words. And I'm gonna review that in the morning and probably pre-record tomorrow because Friday afternoon I'm gonna be driving to Bristol and I want to take a chance on doing it live and being late. You know, you never know what's gonna happen on the road, right? So I'm driving to Bristol Friday afternoon from Sevierville. So I'm gonna pre-record.
Where are you going to be over the weekend?
In Bristol.
Bristol, Tennessee?
Yeah, but I'll be headed back south on Monday. I don't know if I'm going back south through South Carolina or through Alabama. I'm not sure yet. And I don't know if I'm going to stay much longer anywhere else. I'm not sure yet. I'm just going to play it by hand, play it by ear and see what happens. There's an event in South Carolina on the 29th I would really like to be at, but I don't think I'm going to stay out that long. I really don't.
Damn, that's a little over 10 hours away. I was hoping you'd get further west.
Yeah, not this trip. Sorry. I would love to get up your way again. I really need to be in Eureka Springs again. I want to see Ray Williams.
Ray Williams
is an old friend. He's like 91 years old. And I'd like to see him again before he goes, before anything happens.
Microphone muted.
And we have other friends. We have Jerry and Rogers. And I'd like to see Gerald Mosley again before he goes, and he's like 80, but he's in really horrible shape. So yeah, I would love to swing by your way again. I really would.
See, I just like what I catch you
in the road with Jeremiah.
A day drive just to get to meet up with you.
Yeah.
I could do 10 hours, though. Wouldn't be too bad.
Microphone. That's quite a while.
We're going to squeeze in one more chapter?
Yes, sir. Why not? Where are we? We're not finished with 38, are we?
No. Nope. Got a few more verses on 38, then we'll be on 39. Give me just a minute.
Microphone muted.
I drank too much coffee during the day.
Yeah, no worries. What verse were we on?
Yeah, you're like verse 25.
Yep, we're on 24.
Well, we read verse 24 where it says, "Then said Zedekiah unto Jeremiah, let no man know of these words, and thou shalt not die."
Okay, we're on 25.
So Zedekiah believes that Jeremiah is sincere, right? So he's going to try to protect him because he knows he's sincere, but he ain't going to do the right thing because he just can't.
All right. But if the princes hear that I have talked with thee, and they come unto thee and say unto thee, declare unto us now what thou hast said unto the king, hide it not from us. We will not put thee to death. Also what the king said unto thee. Then shalt thou say unto them, I presented my supplication before the king, that he would not call me to return to Jonathan's house to die there. Then came all the princes unto Jeremiah and asked him, and he told them according to all the words that the king had commanded. So they let off speaking with him, for the matter was not perceived. So Jeremiah abode in the court of the prison until the day that Jerusalem was taken. And he was there when Jerusalem was taken.
So this passage is another passage you could add to the list, Joe, that it's okay to lie to the unrighteous. The unrighteous do not deserve the truth.
Yeah, I know. I agree with that. I'm just rereading it.
That would just blow too many people's minds, Bill.
Microphone activated.
Yeah, right, of course. For the unrighteous don't deserve the truth. And I've had other examples in the past, but I wish I'd have remembered this one because it's plain. And I've used other examples to argue my position on that it's okay to lie to the unrighteous. You have Ehud, who brought a gift to the king of Moab, and the gift was a friggin' dagger he stuck through him. And you have Rahab, who lied to the men of Jericho and said that she didn't know where the spies went, right? There is a couple of examples, but this is another one that should be added to that list.
And David, he lied regularly to the king of Gath when he was raiding. He was actually raiding Gath's towns.
Yeah, right, he did. He did, actually, yes.
He was raiding Gath's towns and that king's towns and telling him that it was raiding elsewhere and giving him a piece of the tribute so that he would leave him alone and let him continue. David also mentioned at some point that he hated his own lies. I can't remember where.
He hated what?
His lies, the lies that he had to tell throughout his life.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why you would hate lies that were like righteous lies. I mean, they were justified lies because the unrighteous deserve lies. That's justice. So it must be some other lies, I would think.
Perhaps, but I don't think it was really distinguished. I wish I knew where it was, but it's just that just the concept of lying is not something that white people are very comfortable with, period, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I have problems lying. I really do. But there are times when Melissa and I would walk in a restaurant and sit down and not eat because we realized the whole staff was niggers or all the cooks were niggers or something like that. And it's like, well, we'll just get a bottle of beer, order a bottle of beer, and we'll go and pay the bill and go. Yeah, you know, on the road, that's hard. You fall into so many traps, and we don't want to eat in a restaurant where all the cooks are niggers, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. They were touching your food. Like
something that I do, and I've had people that's just looked up at me before, that be working and take somebody out on a business deal, and if I'm paying for it, and it's, you know, we got a black waitress or a Mexican waitress or whatever, non-white waitress, and I always try to hide the check whenever I'm doing the tip.
Yeah, right.
There's,
yeah, well, that's an immediate example, because that happened to us recently. We walked into a place that we thought would be all right. We didn't want to eat there. Once you sit down and you look around and you watch it for a minute, and it's like, wow, I really don't want to even eat here. So yep. We just order a bottled beer and leave, pay the bill and leave. Go eat somewhere else.
Yeah, if you're doing business stuff, you can't do that, though, because you've already still an appointment to eat. And so if I'm picking up the tab, I'll write whatever the bill is and just do a scribble line across the tip line on the, and I've done that. It seems like always somebody there watching, they see it and they just look at you like you murdered somebody, you know, because you didn't leave them a tip.
Yeah.
Hey, in here on the 39th chapter, in the ninth year of Zedekiah, king of Judah, in the 10th month came Nebuchadrezzar. And I know you've talked about this before, but the Nebuchadrezzar versus Nebuchadnezzar. Is it just a spelling, the way it was translated?
Yeah, it's just a spelling, and it's spelled both ways, and I can't account for why it's both ways.
But it's...
I really
the
haven't
same person, though.
Found any evidence of why it's spelled both ways, but it is. And here, they're in the dictionaries, they're both supposed to mean the same thing. May Nebo protect the crown. Nebo was a Babylonian deity or idol.
Is it one letter, the difference?
Yes, it's a one letter difference in that measured part. It's either an N or an R, but those letters are not that similar where they should be mistaken for one another, like the R and the D or the R and the V, the Vav. It's easy to mistake the Daleth, the Vav, and the Resh.
Microphone activated.
But it's not so easy to mistake the Nun and the Resh. Is kind of weird to me.
Yeah, like Strong's has it as the N under Strong's number 5019.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. And what does Strong say?
I mean, that's how it's spelled, apparently properly, with the N. But...
Well, that's what he has, yeah. But why the King James Version wrote in the book of Drezar in so many places is beyond me.
Yeah, because it goes back and forth. You'll be reading through it, and part of the time it'll be Nebuchadrezzar, and then part of the time it'll be Nebuchadnezzar.
Right.
And probably it one guy.
Back and forth.
Oh, let me see. What do we have here? I'm going to look at the Hebrew of this particular passage.
Sorry, I didn't mean for that to be a digression. I was just wanting to verify that.
Well, in this passage in the Hebrew, it's Nebuchadrezzar. If you look at the Hebrew spelling. It's actually the N letter, and then the B letter, and then a Vav, and then a Samek, and then a daleth or a d, and then an r or a resh, aleth, and that z letter, whatever the hell it's called, zaddy, and then another resh. So it's in the Hebrew, in Bible Works, this is Bible Works 8, Joe, on my laptop. It's the Book of Drezar in the Hebrew. It looks like the North American Standard Bible had sort of homogenized the word, standardized the word at the Book of Nezar, so they have the Book of Nezar. The 70, the Septuagint in the Greek and in Brenton's English, it's Nabucodonosor. 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 So that's way off from these other, that's how they read the Hebrew.
So they're using the N. No?
Yes, that's the User N is in the place approximately channel. Where it Rezar should be. So they had Nezar, yes. But they represented it as Nasor.
Not in the Hebrew, but Nebuchadrezzar would have, if it was going to put an N in it, as you said, I'm probably going to butcher it, Nebuchadnezzar, you'd have to put a vowel point in between the D and the N, right?
Yeah, right. Well, the Septuagint is maybe 280 BC, and the Masoretic text is maybe 600 to 1000 AD in there. So, wow. I'd rely on a Septuagint first, and it's clear that their rendering of the Hebrew letters is quite different than the Masoretic rabbis.
But in the is it spelled the same way throughout all the scriptures, or does it change as well? In the Septuagint, is it standardized? Is it consistently spelled the same way, or does it fluctuate or change back and forth?
I wouldn't doubt if it fluctuates somewhere, but there's 129 occurrences of Nabucodonosor in the Septuagint. 123 verses and 129 appearances, right? So in six verses, it appears twice.
Okay, so the Septuagint was consistent, where the Masoretic text, it varied.
Yeah, because it seems that in the Book of Drezar is 31 occasions. 31 times. 31 different verses. Versus the Book of Drezar. So let me scroll up somewhere and. All right, let me just do a search for the Book of Nezar. That's in 57 verses. 60 times in 57 verses. So that's only 91 times, right? Between the Book of Nezar and the Book of Drezar, that's 91 times. But in the Septuagint, the Book of Dinosaur is 129 times. Oh, you know what? Some of them might be in apocryphal books. That would account for that. Yeah, Judith. That would account for that. There's a bunch in Judith, one in Tobit. And that accounts for that. Baruch, Epistle of Jeremiah. Okay. That accounts for the extra 40 times, right? Or 38 times.
kind of funny in the, even though it's a translation of the Bible, but in the New Anglican Indexed Edition, this is an old Bible.
Yeah, what I would want to do is go look at what the Babylonian inscriptions say. That would be my next step, but it's hard for me to do that from the road. It's a lot easier at home, right? I don't have the books here.
Yeah, but it puts it as, with the way it's spaced out, Nebuchadrezzar. And it R-E-Z-Z-A-R.
Yeah, that Nabu or Nebo or however you want to pronounce it, that's one word. That's the name of a Babylonian deity. And the Book of Nezar seems to be not a name, but a title, like all those Persian and Babylonian kings had used. And but it being a title, it actually does say something. I don't know if Strong's is perfectly correct in what it says, but he says, may Nebo protect the crown, is what it means.
But when we're reading the Bible, when you see Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadrezzar, or however you want to pronounce it, we are still talking about the same person, unless it's Nebuchadnezzar 1 or Nebuchadnezzar 2. Right.
I'm sorry. No, it's not the same person. The Book of Nezar 1 was hundreds and hundreds of years before the Book of Nezar 2.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was saying. Unless there's, but anytime you're reading Nebuchadnezzar, it's going to be either 1 or 2.
No, it's going to be 2 every time.
Oh, it's going to be 2 every time. Okay.
Yeah, and the Book of Nezar 1 is not in the Bible.
Okay, it's 2 that's in the Bible. All right.
Microphone activated.
All right, so 39?
Yeah.
I got to see when the hell the Book of Nezar 1 ruled, but I think it was like 1,000 years before, right?
Okay, I was mixed up on that. I thought it was Nebuchadnezzar 1 that we were, not 2. But hey, in the 9th year of Zedekiah, the king of Judah, in the 10th month came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and all his armies against Jerusalem, and they besieged it. And in the 11th year of Zedekiah, in the 4th month, the 9th day of the month, the city was broken up. And all the princes of the kings of the Babylon came in and sat in the middle gate, even Nergal-Sharezer. Oh, I'm going to struggle with those. Shamgar-Nebo, Shimon, Rabsaras. We're just going to skip some of those. With all the residue of the prince of the king of Babylon. And it came to pass that when Zedekiah, the king of Judah, saw them and all the men of war, then they fled and went forth out of the city by night, by the way of the king's garden, by the gate betwixt the two walls, and he went out of the way of the plain. But the Chaldeans' army pursued after them and overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho. And when they had taken them, they brought him unto Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, to Riblah, in the land of Hamath, where he gave judgment upon him. Then the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah in Riblah before his eyes. So the king of Babylon slew all the nobles of Judah. Moreover, he put Zedekiah's eyes, and he put out Zedekiah's eyes and bound him with chains to carry him to Babylon. And the Chaldeans burned the king's houses and the houses of the people with fire, and break down the walls of Jerusalem. And Nebuzaradan, a captain of the guard, carried away captive into Babylon the remnant of the people that remained in the city, and those that fell away, that fell to him with the rest of the people that remained. And Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, left the poor of the people, which had nothing, in the land of Judah, and gave them vineyards and fields at the same time. And Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, gave charge concerning Jeremiah to Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, saying, "Take him, look well to him, and do him no harm, but do unto him even as he shall say unto thee."
Okay, James.
I think almost,
James. Let's hang out a second. Let's hang out a second.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
What version of the Bible is that? These.
It's a King James Version.
King James Version.
Yeah.
Are you sure it's not like redacted or amended or like a special version that?
I don't know. A lot of times this just says Holy Bible King James Version.
Okay, I'm sorry. I had to find out.
No, I'm screwing up the names because I read to myself in silence and I don't read out loud very often.
Okay. Yeah, you know, that's why I mispronounce a lot of names, because I actually looked up how they should be pronounced in Strong's Pronunciation Guide when I started reading the Bible. And so I say Zion instead of Zion because it should be Zion. And it pisses a lot of people off, or it upsets the Jews too. But I say Zion because if you look at the Strong's Pronunciation Guide, that's how it should be pronounced. And I'm never going to repent. So I just want to know what version you were using. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I know I'm not reading very well, but.
Nah, you're doing fine, but those names just get kind of interesting in verse 3. Was it verse 3?
No, that's because I skipped over some.
Okay.
Nergal Sherazar. And I don't like the way they space out. And some of the Bibles, the way they space out the names, it kind of throws me off sometimes. I can read them to myself, and then whenever I say it out loud, it sounds stupid.
Well, to me, Nergal Sharazar, that actually kind of sounds like more like an Assyrian name, but it's not necessarily. It's said to mean Prince of Fire, that he was a chief soothsayer and ruler in the army of Nebuchadnezzar. That's what it says. A lot of times that stuff's just conjecture, but it sounds good. Prince of Fire, so he's some kind of soothsayer. And Sam Garnebo, you see that word Nebo in there, and that's the same word that gives us the beginning of Nebuchadnezzar, right? So Sam Garnebo is that Babylonian deity is in that name, and that means sword of Nebo, supposedly.
And then Sarshazim?
Sarsakim means prince of the eunuchs. So he's a ruler over the court or the household. Rabsaris means chief eunuch. These are really all titles, right? They're not really names. They're all titles. None of them are names.
So would it, and this might be just pissing in somebody's soup, but wouldn't it have made more sense to translate them?
Sorry? We're losing you, James. You cut out.
He said, wouldn't it make more sense to translate the names?
Yeah, translate the title rather than try to translate.
Well, to me, that would make perfect sense, yes. And if I was translating the Old Testament, that's what I would probably do, is verify the translations and use the titles. Rad Mag means chief magician, chief magi, evidently. So yeah, I would rather see the titles there.
Yeah, because otherwise it just makes it, it seems to make it a lot more confusing just for the average, you know, just for somebody that's sitting down reading the Bible. And for myself, it makes it more confusing that way, because then you're having to sound out these names.
So if I was doing this, I would probably say, and all the officials of the King of Babylon came in and sat in the middle of the gate, even the Prince of Fire or the Chief of Fire or Chief Soothsayer. The Chief Soothsayer is cool. The Sword of Nebo, that seems to be a name. Sharsekim, the Prince of the Eunuchs. Okay, the Chief of the Eunuchs, the Chief Eunuch, the Chief of the Magi, the Chief of the Fire. Yeah, you could probably make a decent translation and use titles, yes. That Sword of that Sam Garnebo or Sword of Nebo, that might just be the general of the army, right? So I would want to research that.
Microphone activated.
All right.
I'm pretty sure that Nebo or Nebu, it's where we get the word nebulous. Sky, or perhaps even outside of Earth, like the stars, the sky.
Okay, but I would want to look for a Latin meaning first.
Well, the Slavs get it from the Latin word. They say neba for sky, which is the Latin. Would they get that from Latin?
They might get nebulous from Latin then.
Yeah,
I want to check for.
English shares it with, I think, almost. I bet you if you look up other Latin-based languages like French, and I bet you they have. I don't know. They probably have something similar.
Well, Zedekiah lost all his sons slain right before him, and the reason, in my opinion, why the king of Babylon did not kill Zedekiah, but only put his eyes out, was to purposely prolong his suffering. Because he has to live now with no eyes, he can't see, and at the same time, he has to live knowing that all his sons were killed for his deeds. Where the prophet Jeremiah told him, if you surrender and go to Babylon, that you live. And his sons probably would have lived too. And the Romans were the same way. The Romans had mercy on cities that surrendered to them, but they had no mercy on cities that resisted them. So when they destroyed the city, that they sold everybody into slavery, they punished everybody for having the audacity to oppose them.
Yeah, and we see kind of the opposite of that throughout the Bible, where whenever the Israelites set siege, most of the time, or a lot of the time, whenever they did conquer a people, in their folly, they ended up keeping the women or you know, keeping the children or whatever, and didn't just destroy them and carry them away. They ended up keeping people to breed with.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of permissible if they're of your same race, but it's not permissible if they're Canaanites.
Right. But we even see it with whenever they conquered Canaanite nations that they ended up keeping part of them sometimes.
I'm not sure if I know of an explicit occurrence of that, but I'm sure it happened.
I can't imagine them doing it like in the New World when like the Spanish conquered Southern America and they're like, look at these women, yeah. We're conquering, you know, like they didn't bring their wives with them. So now they're conquering in this foreign country and there's all these little trolls and goblins around and they end up breeding with them and it's disgusting.
Yeah, right. They didn't look like Disney's Pocahontas, right?
Yeah, no shit.
Just a white girl, but she has dark skin. But she had white features.
Well, all the, if you look at any of the, well, used to, not the modern day Disney stuff, I'm sure, but if you looked at any of the older Disney stuff, they all had white features.
Now it's going the other way. Now they're making everything ugly. Like them.
Yeah.
Better
okay, let's see. We were at, were we at 11?
Probably.
Is that okay? In 10, that's Nebu Zaradon, right?
Yes, Nebu Zaradon. Ebo has given seed.
Okay, well, we'll start
and, it. And that is, Zara is seed or sowing, and Nebu. Nebo, I can see the words for seed and Ebo in there. So yeah, Nebo has given seed.
Okay, so at verse 10, but Nebo Zaradon, the captain of the guard, left the poor of the people, which had nothing, we already read that, in the land of Judah, and gave them vineyards and fields at the same time. Now Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, gave charge concerning Jeremiah to Nebu Zaradon, the captain of the guard, saying, take him and look well to him, and do unto him no harm, but do unto him even as he shall say unto thee. So Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, sent, and Nebushazban, Rabshares, and Negril Sharazer, Ramag, and all the king of Babylon's princes. Even they sent and took Jeremiah out of the court of the prison and committed him unto
Gedaliah.
How do you say that one?
Gedaliah.
The son,
it might be Gedaliah.
The son of Ahiakim, the son of Shaphan, that he should carry him into the home, so he dwelt among the people. Now the word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah while he was shut up in the court of the prison, saying, go and speak to Abed-Melech, the Ethiopian, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will bring my words upon this city for evil, and not for good, and they shall be accomplished in the day before thee. But I will deliver thee in that day, saith the Lord, and thou shalt not be given unto the hand of the man of whom thou art afraid. For I will surely deliver thee, and thou shalt not fall by the sword, but thou shalt be for a prey unto thee, because thou hast put thy trust in me, saith Yahweh.
But thy life shall be for a prey unto thee. That means he's going to keep his life.
Yes.
And I think of a psalm, or is it a proverb, which says something like, the wicked don't believe that God punishes the unjust and rewards the just. And so that's sort of the king's attitude is, oh, I can just do whatever I want and God doesn't care. That's a wicked attitude. And so God is saying at the end here, he's saying, you will see my words fulfilled before your eyes. You know, so that as a faithful Christian, that's what we believe. Like, God's words are being fulfilled before our eyes, and he will punish the wicked and reward the just. But the pagans, the atheists, don't believe that. The pagans are atheists, really.
And with that, I don't think anybody here can stand to struggle through my mispronunciations any further.
I think you did a good job. just on the name, some of the names are a bit tricky. It even says there that Jeremiah will have his life because he trusted Yahweh. So there's that contrast between Zedekiah. Zedekiah gets his eyes put out. He was blind to the truth. And Jeremiah, he's got his reward, his life. So even though Jeremiah was in the prison, he comes out of the prison because he trusted Yahweh. And Zedekiah goes off into a prison. Much worse than Jeremiah was in.
Oh yeah, Zedekiah was like, he really screwed himself not listening to Jeremiah. Even though he was merciful and he understood that he was, that Jeremiah was sincere, he still wouldn't listen. He couldn't do it. His pride wouldn't let him do it.
And he was like the king of Babylon. I'm the king of Babylon. I have all the authority. And then just in one day, it's all gone and he's a prisoner. And Jeremiah, who was the prisoner, is now elevated in one day. And God took it all away in one day. You know, these people who think they're the top of the world today, tomorrow they might not be at the top of the world anymore.
Bye. That's the moment we all await. Just got to be like Jeremiah.
We're in the prison. We're in the mud. We're sinking into the mud. And we're reaching up, you know, like Peter sinking into the sea. The sea is all the non-white race. And he's going, Lord, Lord, help me. And Jesus reaches for his hand and he pulls him out. Just like Jeremiah in the mud, he's sinking into the mud, the non-white. You know,
well, it's probably going to too far. To swim in a sea full of niggers. In a sea of niggers.
That's what it's like. That's what we're like. We're sinking into the sea. And we're like crying, Lord, Lord, save us.
We're going to be on this Comparé thing for about at least 2 weeks.